With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Zarin.
Elizabeth.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Clyde, how about you?
I'm good. I'm still recovering from the churro riot.
I know, man. I'm telling you, you really took one for the team on that.
I got three black eyes. Team.
Three black eyes?
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, congratulations.
Listen, buddy. Uh-huh. Do you know what's ridiculous?
I do, Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know it used to be legal for people to send children by mail?
To send children?
Babies by mail.
Really?
They could just slap postage on a baby and they would deliver baby.
Like put them in a box?
Everything I just said about the, yes. Like, you know how you get an envelope, you just like put stamps on it, and then if someone comes and picks it up and they deliver it to the address that you also affix to that same thing?
Yeah.
So if you can get an address affixed to a baby, put some stamps on it, they will deliver it. This is a real thing.
Was like, there a limit to how far away this
I'm glad you asked. Newspapers.com. Check it out. Go back to the beginning of the last century, the early 1900s, and you'll notice that the post office, they basically, as we think of them, they kind of kicks off in 1913. So then there'd be these news stories in 1913 about, an Ohio couple sending their 8-month-old son. They mailed their son to his grandmother, but this only lived a few miles away. So it's kind of like a cutesy thing, right? The baby was just shy of the 11-pound weight limit that the packages sent by parcel post. So it was considered a delivery, and it cost 15 cents to have the baby mailed the 2 miles.
Very young.
Yeah. They did not. They did insure the child for $50. So they insured the child against damages.
In my head, I'm thinking it's like a toddler.
No,
but this is like
it's a pretty big kid.
11 pounds. You haven't been out in the open air for too long.
In 1914, a 4-year-old girl was mailed via train from Idaho to 73 miles away. So, yeah.
Someone's like, send me a baby.
No, you mean to picture him like, oh, did they put the baby in the canvas sack and then the train went by and caught it on the hook and threw it in back? No, the postal person was related to the family. So the clerk was like, oh, I will be taking them on the railway.
That's not really sending them.
So, yeah, that one was, but the baby is a little bit more like they threw it in there. But anyway, if you go back to June 14th, 1913, you will notice a bunch of newspapers running the same story about sending a baby around. So there you go. There's one to look for.
Interesting.
Anyway, eventually they had new regulations on what could be sent in the parcel, and then eventually you could no longer send babies. But for a while, when they didn't really have the rules worked out, you'd get that baby. Ridiculous,
nice.
Right?
That is ridiculous. Do you know what else is ridiculous?
No, I was hoping you did, because I do not.
Well,
that was it. I just told you all I know.
If you're not going to ask, I'll tell you.
Yeah, what is ridiculous,
Elizabeth? Diamonds, a gigolo, a con artist, a cardinal, a queen, and a revolution.
Oh, wow.
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous.
I know you heard that.
I know I heard it too. We are going, as the great Huey Lewis sang, back in time. I have an old one for you.
We love him.
Ah, I love Huey Lewis.
Bay Area, you know, local. What can right? you do?
And I think, doesn't he have a condition where he can't sing anymore?
Yeah, I believe so. And we're loyal, so we keep the name alive.
Exactly. We sing back in time.
We're his voice now, Elizabeth.
Yeah, sorry, Huey.
Sorry, Huey.
So this is deep history. Yeah. This is serious stuff, big time stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's in France.
Ooh.
So I'm going to butcher all the names.
It's one of my favorite countries.
I'm not going to say
to butcher names.
I love them. I love the people, the culture.
Oh, je t'aime.
The land, the terroir. But I am about to just rock their worlds. So I'm not too well versed in European royalty.
Oh, yeah.
Like which kings or queens reigned from what year to what?
You're in luck. Neither am I, so I won't
Perfect.
Correct you.
Well, and I'm not a royalist, if you hadn't figured that out
no.
already.
No.
Yeah, I don't really pay attention to him.
You're very much Lincoln Brigade material, aren't you?
I didn't get into the whole Harry and Meghan business.
No, I don't remember
really
ever mentioning
care.
That.
I hope the whole thing falls apart, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. They're all on high-end welfare. Let's just call it what it is.
A bunch of welfare queens, literally.
And it sucks that they treat Meghan so badly,
yes.
from what I understand, but is anyone surprised?
No, we all saw that going in.
Yeah. I have for you a criminal scandal,
Ooh.
A sneaky one, a juicy one, a French one. Ouf la la. Let's talk Jean de Saint-Remy de Valois.
Ah, boom, voilà.
Countess de la Motte.
Yes.
She was born Jean de Saint-Remy. In 1756.
Okay.
Where,
Elizabeth?
Thank you. Fontette, which is in the Champagne region of France, so you know she was bubbly. Oh.
Hey! She was born in Funtown, Champagne?
Funtown, Champagne. She was the second child in the family that claimed that they were descendant from an illegitimate son of Henry II, King of France, from 1547 to 1559.
Okay.
And
so were they going Bourbons then?
I think they're
Louis. Yeah.
Yeah, House of Valois.
Valois, yeah, it's right there. You go.
Her father Jacques is the only one who claimed to be descended from him, and then the mistress Nicole de Sévigné.
Mm.
Though the couple produced a kid 200 years prior, and the child was illegitimate, that royal blood made Jacques nobility, and that illegitimate son got the title of Comte de Saint-Remy.
Really?
Yeah.
So he just becomes, he inherits the landed title.
Yeah. And that was the title that Jean's dad claimed.
Okay.
So Jean's mother, Marie, she did not come from noble stock.
Mm-hmm.
She was a maid who got into the family way thanks to Jacques. It happens.
Yeah.
But what usually doesn't happen is that Jacques married her.
Oh,
like
hey.
His family was like, all right, listen, we can make her go away. Family's not pleased.
Yes.
And so Jacques.
This is like Three Musketeers stuff. I'm into this.
Totally. Jacques inherits an estate from his father,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't inherit the cash to keep it up.
Oh, yeah. That's a problem. A
big problem.
You got to get your vassals doing stuff.
Exactly. and Jacques's a drunk.
Yes.
And his bride spent money like water. So between the two of them. They live at this estate,
yes.
but they live like paupers.
Okay.
And when Jean
they live
was
in like
young,
one room of their estate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the only one they could afford to heat.
Yeah. So Jean's young.
Mm-hmm.
They move the whole family to Paris because okay. Jacques figures like that's where the nobles go to stake their claim.
Oh, totally.
And I'm a noble. So
and
like,
you can be a courtesan that way, eat
totally.
For free.
Totally. And like the fancy.
They invited a lot of dinners.
The fancy lineage, that would help.
Mm-hmm.
But they were broke. Times were tough. Jean and her siblings, they had difficult childhoods.
Sure.
She was forced to beg on the streets of Paris and Versailles when she was 4 years old, starting at the age of four. So Jacques, he died in 1762 when Jean was only 6 years old. And then the mother, right, she takes a new lover, which good for her. But then she abandoned her three children, which boo. So she hands them off to the Marquise de Boulainvilliers.
Okay.
And the Marquise, this, you know, looks out for
the Marquise
for the
bread of life
yeah.
or whatever you
whatever
said.
It is, Bougainvillea. Yeah. So this is a major leg up for the kids. So the Marquise's wife, Madame de Boulainvilliers, took a liking to her new foster children.
Okay.
And Jean would later describe her as her true mother.
Hmm.
In 1775, thanks to the work of Madame, the family's claims of noble blood were officially confirmed by the royal genealogist.
Nice.
And so, woohoo,
Yay.
Just in time. They got like 14 more years.
Well, that's why? Really I'll tell benefit. You, right? So the nobles of France, they had a social safety net.
Okay.
So you got 4-year olds out there begging, but oh, when we find out who your, you know, great grandpappy was, they Jean and her siblings, they got like a modest annual stipend.
Oh, totally. Yeah. You're in the system.
Yeah. So now you're in the system. We'll take care of you. And that paid for Jean's brother Jacques Jr. to go off to a military academy. And then Jean and her sister Marianne, they were sent off to a boarding school. And like it was supposed to be like a prep for a convent.
Sure.
Jean didn't have what they called, quote, the monastic temperament. She was not into this whole school to convent pipeline.
And so like listening to authority.
And, you know, neither was Marianne. And so
I like it. I respect it.
She and her sister, they ran away from school. They moved back to Champagne.
Okay.
Champagne. To a town close to Fontette called Bar-sur-Ebre.
Oh.
Or whatever, Bar. She was described.
Bar on the Ebb?
Yeah, Bar on the Ebb in Champagne mm-hmm. next to Funtown. So she was described at the time as, quote, not what one would call beautiful. She was of medium height, but svelte and compact. She had blue eyes full of expression under high-arched black eyebrows, a slightly elongated face, a wide mouth, but full of excellent teeth, and is proper for someone like her. Her smile was enchanting. She was lacking any kind of education, but she still had a great deal of wit, which was lively and astute. Like, that sounds pretty beautiful to me, but what
totally.
Do I know?
And also, like, every single time they're like, hey, I gotta give you a real good picture of this person. So, they're not pretty.
She's a right? dog.
But here, I'll tell you why.
But it's always like, she was hideous. She's a dog. But, you know, listing them all off these
totally.
Wonderful qualities. Everyone,
also,
everyone's beautiful if you look at them
oh,
long enough.
Oh, I
you
completely
know what
agree
I mean?
With like, this. But also, let's just go by their standard of their appreciated. You never hear the average that they're talking about.
No.
There's just like this far end of like, she was beautiful. I'd want to take her home to my mother, have my son marry her, right? And then the other one was like, she was a dog. I wouldn't let her in my home at night. You're just like, is there anybody who's just like, she looked like someone in my town?
Like a wreck. Like, you know, totally. Like, well, and the thing is, it's like, I don't know, all these, what does that have to do with
exactly.
anything?
Exactly. There's never a normal person.
No, and there's no point to them.
So they always bring it in. It's always like.
Always.
Anyway.
Always.
On.
So it was in Bar that she met the gendarme Nicolas de la Motte.
Okay. So now she's messing around with cops?
Yeah. So Nicolas, he's described as, quote, homely, but a man of splendid physique. Like, he's a butterface.
He's a butterface. He's a hardcore butterface.
So they palled around, they fooled around, uh-huh. and before you knew it, Jean was pregnant. He did the right thing, and Jean and Nicolas, they got married July of 1780. And then she gave birth to twins soon after, but then, as a tragedy, they both died a few days later.
No, very common.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
There were rumors that someone other than Nicolas was the papa. But there's no proof.
Hmm.
So the couple, they started like calling themselves the Comte and Comtesse de la Motte.
Okay.
And it's a completely made up title.
Yes.
But you know what? You do you.
Do yeah, run with it.
Yeah. So Nicolas and Jean.
Make it fun to say.
And their new fake titles in tow, they mm-hmm. head off to Paris. And Jean, she cozies up to the legit nobility. She got to know Madame Elizabeth, me.
Oh. Do you recommend her?
Yeah, she's great. Homely, but you know, this is the teenage sister of King Louis the 16th.
Oh, okay.
So she started hooking up with another court hanger-on, a man named Louis-Marc Antoine Retaux de Villette.
Yes, the real end of the run courtesans.
Yes.
Yeah, so, like the ones who are like, this is why we got rid of the...
And Retaux, he was a childhood friend of her husband's.
Okay.
And he was a gigolo.
I was like about to say, he was just mess
worker.
Around. Like all these people
yeah,
are just messing. There's no one doing anything at this point.
Now, he was a good looking dude.
I'm
and he
sure.
had a great personality.
He's
so
a professional.
He didn't get...
He's selling it.
Yes. Exactly. And his clients were like noble ladies
yeah.
who were in need of something to pass
It was
the time.
France. I've read about them.
Yeah.
I
was there, Zarin.
Yeah, you know better yeah. than anyone.
And he turned out young gals. Like yeah. he set them up with gigs in Parisian brothels.
Oh, I've seen Dangerous Liaisons.
Exactly. They were some freaky deekies. So Jean, she hired him as her, quote, personal secretary.
Oh, of course.
And then she met Cardinal Louis de Rohan.
He takes dictation.
Yeah. Louis de Rohan, the cardinal. He was like from a big dog of noble French cardinal families. Roulon. Yeah.
Okay.
He was descended from the kings who ruled Brittany before the unification of France.
Okay, cool.
And in 1772.
He's clannish then.
Oh, yeah, totally. 1772, he was sent to Vienna as ambassador, but he was not qualified for the job. They're just like, but you got the right name.
And you're really not doing anything there
Nepo
anyway.
Nepo baby, off you go.
Do you party well?
While he was there, he managed to offend Empress Maria Theresa.
You do not party well.
Not only the Archduchess of Austria, but also the mother of Marie Antoinette.
Yes.
So even worse, he opposed an alliance with Austria. And as you know, how did France seal the alliance with Austria?
Marriages,
yes. Marie Antoinette. Quelle horreur.
Yeah, and then that was also the undoing for Napoleon later on, but the Austrians flipping on it.
Precisely. So, needless to say, Marie Antoinette couldn't stand Rohan.
Okay.
Rohan was convinced that her hatred kept him from, like, career advancement.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
You know, he's probably right.
Probably 100%.
So, the cardinal, Rohan, he first met Jeanne in 1782 in Versailles.
We're getting
and
close.
She told him her, I know, just, I love this. It's like, I told you, like, I love books between World War One, World War Two, where it's like, you guys don't know what's going on.
This is very much the Titanic vibe. Yes. Like, it's out there.
It's out there. So she tells him her whole life sob story.
Okay.
Cardinal gives her a small amount of money. And over time, she would ask for, like, larger sums, and he'd fork it on over.
Okay.
And then he suggested that she try to get a meeting with the queen. He's like, I can't help you with that, but, like, you know, because she hates me.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Should probably see if, you know, she's chummy.
But she's richer than I am. So.
Yeah, basically. And there are rumors that Jeanne and the cardinal became lovers.
I'm guessing. Let's with the say whole money
true.
Exchange and the protection.
That's just how it worked in those days. Everyone
and it's
became,
France of it all.
Everyone became lovers.
Oh, yeah, any which way
eventually,
they could.
Eventually. So soon after, she began telling the cardinal that the queen had finally noticed her.
Oh.
And that more than just meeting with her had taken her in as a confidant. According to historian Jonathan Beckman, in his book, How to Ruin a Queen.
That's a
quote,
title.
Right?
Jeez.
Jeanne told the cardinal that the queen had taken pity on her condition, had invited her into her private chambers, and had adopted her as a companion. She used the opportunity to tell the queen of the chagrin Rohan felt at his disgrace and of his wish to atone. Marie Antoinette proved open to a reconciliation, and they embarked on a correspondence with Jeanne as a go-between of welling intimacy.
So then the bishop got the play he wanted. He's like, look.
Completely.
Yeah, I mean, this is some very French stuff. This is like Cardinal Richelieu kind of.
Yes, so, you know, the cardinal, he's stoked at the chance to get into the queen's good graces.
Yeah, and clear is a good name.
And with Jeanne's encouragement, starts corresponding with the queen via letters that she's going to pass between them.
Yeah.
In reality, it was Retaux forging the letters from Marie Antoinette.
Oh.
And the gigolo. And
yeah.
He was apparently a really great forger. He could do a spot-on imitation of the queen's handwriting.
What?
Yeah. And, like, to keep up the farce, though, they needed money. So in the letters, the queen asks the cardinal for loans to supplement the allowance that she was given by the king.
Okay.
She's like, he's just, you know, I don't get enough walking around money. So Jeanne soaked the cardinal for about 120,000 francs, which was a lot of money then.
So he thinks he's playing the real power move, and she's like naive. She gets in there, and he's like, cool. He never considers the fact that, like, maybe,
like,
he would have no way to confirm because it's all in the under.
Yeah.
So he could so easily be open to
playing
being,
her. Yeah. Nobody plays her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he's being played and paying for the being played part of it.
Right.
Yes.
So Jeanne and Nicholas, they buy fancy clothes and other finery for themselves.
Oh, they're Frenching it up.
Oh, they're telling people who ask this, well, our stipend got increased.
Yeah. Why do you think I got this high-ass wig?
Totally.
This is a pompadour.
Well, and so pretty soon the letters, like, they take an amorous turn.
Sure.
And the cardinal is like, look, set up a meeting. Like, I can't just keep it to the letters. These texts, too hot.
Really? Let me come and knock on my door?
Yeah, exactly. So lucky for Jeanne, Nicholas knew a sex worker named Nicole de Gay, who apparently kind of looked like Marie Antoinette.
Okay.
And so Nicholas and Jeanne brought her to Versailles and started calling her Baronne d'Oliva. And they told her that the queen needed a favor and that she'd be paid well for her help. So Nicole, she later said she had no idea what she's getting herself into, although there was some suspicion all around that.
Yeah.
And so on a night in August of 1784, she gets sent to the gardens of Versailles holding a rose and a letter. Let's take a break.
All right.
As the scam's building, Jeanne, she wants a bigger score. She hears about Charles Auguste Bohmer and his diamond necklace. So when we come back, we're going to talk about this diamond necklace.
All right.
Springtime is all about fresh air and fresh starts, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security. It's the only home security system I use and recommend. Here's why I love it. With the days getting longer and the weather warming up, we're out and about a lot more, and that applies to criminals too. I don't have to worry because SimpliSafe blankets my whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. And there are indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over my property day and night. It's not just cameras. SimpliSafe has professional monitoring agents who keep watch on your home when you aren't there. Agents can stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera, warning them that they're being recorded and the police are on their way. Sounds great, right? There's no contract, and they offer a 60-day money-back guarantee. So trying SimpliSafe is risk-free. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Bonjour.
Hey, salut.
Hello. I was telling you about Jean de Saint-Remy, Comtesse de la Motte.
Ah, comment allez-vous, comte?
Ouais. Voulez-vous?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
she had her scammy life in Paris in the 1700s. I mentioned a diamond necklace.
Yes.
Do you own a diamond necklace?
I had to sell it after the war.
Do you want to buy one?
Yes.
It's made out of fish sammies. This necklace. Let me tell you about this necklace, this French one.
Please.
It was commissioned by Louis XV for his mistress, Madame du Barry.
Mm.
However, the king died before the necklace was completed.
Yeah, he was kind of a do-nothing king.
Yeah. So the jewelers, Bohmer and Bassenge,
yes.
They decided to finish the work, and they figured, well, we'll just sell it to Marie Antoinette.
Yeah, she loves the baubles.
Yeah. The queen, though, is not interested.
Ooh.
It left him in a little bit of a rough spot. Because, right. Like, you know.
There's only so many buyers.
Well, getting all those materials and spending all the time, like, yeah. It was,
but you're really
almost,
only aiming, like, four people who,
yeah,
can buy it.
And just the getting it to that point had almost bankrupted
them. Of course,
them.
Yeah.
So did Marie Antoinette care? She was all, see this cake?
Yes. Like, you can eat it, son.
She didn't give a tinker's damn how much they'd sunk into the thing already. Well, she wasn't interested. And she had no intention of purchasing anything ever intended for a royal mistress. That was the thing. In fact, she told the jewelers to never mention the necklace to her again.
Of course.
Yeah. Don't let it pass your lips. According to that, your new favorite book, How to Ruin a Queen.
Yes.
Quote, the necklace comprised 647 diamonds weighing 2,800 carats.
Wow.
17 shallot-sized diamonds formed a choker around the neck from which three festoons lolled. Two rows of smaller stones ran clockwise like bandoliers from the shoulders, meeting at the breastbone. Two frills of diamonds hung from this knot, pawing at the waist like withered forearms. Down the back hung two streamers, which counterbalanced the weight of the necklace and prevented the wearer from toppling forwards. Grotesque and almost literally unbearable, it resembled an item of chainmail or something a monk might wear in penitential self-chastisement than a coveted piece of jewelry.
Oh my God.
I mean,
so this thing was pretty much what made people want to start the French Revolution. They saw this.
100%.
But you just made chainmail out of diamonds.
The description makes me want to go like stand on a rubble with a flag. I, you know.
No wonder they got the guillotine out there, like, yo, your diamonds protect you from this?
This is symbolic. Obscene.
That's nuts.
So, you know,
sacrebleu.
People know it's out there. They know it exists.
Oh, everyone's talking about this in Paris, I bet.
They know it's a rock flawless. And in early 1785, Jeanne, she starts putting the word out that Marie Antoinette actually does want the necklace.
Oh.
She starts a little whisper campaign.
Really?
She said she just didn't want to upset her husband. That's why she didn't. And the rumor was specifically targeted at the jewelers and the cardinal. Honestly, I'm wondering if anyone else really cared or believed that Jeanne was close to the queen.
I can see the plus signal coming together in this.
So Jeanne had Retaux forge
the gigolo,
yet another letter,
of course,
from the queen
with
to
the great
cardinal.
Handwriting, yeah.
Super steamy.
Oh, yeah.
And the cardinal is like waiting impatiently. She says in the letter, I want to meet you. I want to see you.
These
I want to talk about
aren't
something.
Enough.
Yeah.
Come and knock on my door.
So the cardinal begs Jeanne, please, please set up a meeting. And she knew she had to do it for the con to work. So Zarin, close your eyes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I want you to picture it. You are a groundskeeper at the Palace de Versailles. You are also an insomniac. Every evening you toss and turn and then give up and wander the gardens you so lovingly tend. It's not unusual for you to happen upon some tryst in action. The nobles are some freaky freaks. You're always dressed in dark colors and you move quietly, so you're able to slip away before the people you stumble upon even know you were there. And then you make your way to a quiet part of the large gardens and continue your restless contemplations. On this evening, you see a woman in a white gown. And hot dog if it doesn't look like the queen. Marie Antoinette right there in the flesh. You've seen her out here before, but not alone like this. This is unusual. You hear heavy footsteps approaching. You step behind a hedge and listen. Up walks Cardinal Louis de Rohan. Oh, dang. This dude is so obviously sprung on the queen. He's not the only one, but he's the most pitiful in your book. An owl hoots in the tree above you and gives you a fright. You look back and see the queen present something to Rohan. A white rose. Being a groundskeeper, you know all about the language of flowers. It's all the rage. Specific flowers and then specific colors have meaning. And you're always asked to plant flowers so that the nobles can send specific messages to each other with bouquets or whatnot. The queen whispers to Rohan, "You know what this means." "You know what it means, all right. The white rose has a clear meaning. I am worthy of your affections."
Oh.
You then see Marie Antoinette pass a letter to Rohan. He takes a deep sniff of the paper and grunts. Marie Antoinette turns her head and then scampers off toward the palace. I know, that was gross, right? So gross. Leaving Rohan holding the rose and the envelope. As she turns, you see something. There was something a little bit off about the queen's face. You think about it and come to the conclusion that that actually wasn't the queen at all. The owl above you hoots again. Rohan doesn't even look up. He's so lost in his emotions that he just stares at the letter. And then he, too, scampers off in the opposite direction of the palace. You resume your midnight wanderings, just you and the crickets and the owl, and maybe some freaky deekies in the bushes somewhere. So, you can guess.
Yes.
The letter told Rohan to buy the necklace, make an initial payment on it. She'd pay the rest. Rohan went to the jewelers with the good news. Now, he was meeting with Nicole.
Yes, the second.
Sex, yeah, the sex worker.
Yes. The lookalike. The queen lookalike.
And so he goes to the jewelers. The jewelers are stoked.
Of course.
And so they didn't think they'd ever recoup on this
No,
thing.
They're like pretty much going, should we go to the colonies?
You know, like, pretty much. And then they all agreed to a price. 1.6 million livres, which is almost $15 million today.
Oh,
it took a lot of calculations to get there.
I bet.
from like one currency. Anyway.
Yeah, I know that from the Musketeers.
Yeah, so $15 million, mm-hmm. that's not a lot.
No.
Based on what I know about prices from enormous gems, which is what I know from this podcast. So the Rohan, the cardinal, and the jewelers, they write out a contract, mm-hmm. which was supposedly taken to the queen by Jeanne. And then it was returned, signed Marie Antoinette de France. Ouf la la.
Can you just do that as the queen, Marie Antoinette de France?
Well, here's the thing. The queen would have signed her name on the contract as Marie Antoinette, not de France. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, which Marie Antoinette? The French one.
That's the kind Marie of the giveaway.
The French one.
The French. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tom of Finland.
Tom's of Finland. Yeah, so that was kind of a giveaway. Uh-huh. Cardinal didn't notice it. Jewelers didn't notice it. Mm-hmm. So the money was supposed to be paid in installments, and there wasn't like a deposit or anything.
Okay.
January of 1785, the cardinal, he made the first payment, and the jewelers handed it over, just handed the necklace over, first payment. I guess they trusted that the queen was going to pay them. They're like, Marie Antoinette, the French one, said she'd pay. It's right here.
Wow.
So the cardinal takes the necklace back to Jeanne's, and then where a valet of the queen came and took it away.
Uh-huh.
Zarin, uh-huh. that was not a valet of the queen.
No.
I know. So Nicholas.
Wait a minute, Elizabeth.
Nicholas breaks the necklace down. He uh-huh. dismantles it.
Oh, my God.
Starts selling the gems. Like, first in Paris, then London.
He doesn't even go to, like, Netherlands? He's no. just, like, right here in
but
Paris?
But he's, like, doing it slowly so yeah. as not to attract attention.
He's not doing it, like, outside Versailles.
He's not going to take this big bucket of giant gems exactly. and be like, what do you got for you? You know, like, little bits, dribs and drabs here.
He should go to Italy.
And,
anyway.
Like, they would get money. They'd make a sale and uh-huh. then turn around and spend the money immediately.
Oh, of course. They're doing all the things. Things wrong.
That was their ATM yeah. completely. So the cardinal, he covers that first payment, and he thought the queen was going to pay the rest.
Of course.
And after 6 months, payment two hadn't shown up as promised. So
6 months, the jewelers
they're like, let's go find this payment.
Oh yeah, let's go bring some gendarmes.
So they go to the cardinal. He'd been having some doubts about the sale
oh,
at this
think?
Point. 6 months goes by. He compared the handwriting in his letters to known examples of the queen's handwriting and saw they didn't exactly match. And like, this was about to be embarrassing.
Oh my God.
And then he stalls them. He stalls the jewelers. Mm-hmm. The jewelers, they turn around, they write a letter to the queen thanking her for purchasing the necklace. And they mention that they hadn't seen her wearing it. Was there something wrong? And then Marie Antoinette, like, she gets it. She has no idea what they're talking about. They're like, whatever. So,
but is this her regular jewelers where she would have some, like, recourse with them? Where, like,
I don't know. You know,
like, she hears them and they'd be like, wait a minute.
I think they had to be, like, significant
yeah,
jewelers.
Yeah, right? There's got to be only a few of them.
She just ignored the letter, though. She's like, I don't know.
That's nonsense.
They sent me some little bauble and I didn't wear it, whatever.
Is this a forgery?
Yeah. So then the jewelers, they go to Henriette Campan,
okay.
one of Marie Antoinette's ladies-in-waiting.
Sure.
And, like, she was pretty shocked by the details, so she goes right to the queen. The queen ordered the jewelers brought to her,
mm-hmm.
and as they started comparing notes, one thing became obvious. The cardinal's at the center of these things. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to see how, if, why, when Rohan can weasel out of this mess.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today.
Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Bonjour.
Hello.
Hello. je m'appelle Elizabeth.
Yeah. Ah, je m'appelle D'Artagnan.
J'habite à Californie.
Ah, j'habite.
I'm giving you like the first grade stuff. Aquí.
I ran out. I threw it. I was like, I'm not saying that.
I know. When we left off, yes. Jeanne and her husband, they'd pulled a mega con on the Cardinal.
Okay.
They managed to get the giant diamond necklace, mm-hmm. the hideous.
The diamond hood.
Well, it was like a diamond chest piece.
Exactly.
Like, it's a very kind of, I'm going to wear this to the Met Gala type
I'm going
to
use this, you told me, to like choke an alligator.
They're like, is this camp?
And then is this too much?
But they're living large off the profits of the sales of the individual stones.
And talk has got to be spreading like ripples at this point.
Oh, you have no idea.
That's all Paris runs on is gossip and the envy.
Yeah, totally. And so Marie Antoinette, she gets wise to the whole thing.
Okay.
And now heads will roll.
Well, eventually, yes.
And the things came to a head. August 15th, the Feast of the Assumption of Mary.
What year are we in, by the way?
We are in 1785, 86? I want to say.
Still? Yeah. We're still in 85? Okay. Because I maybe said 6 months later.
1785.
I want to make sure we hadn't
switched. So yeah, now that was in January that the deal
so
goes down.
We're
into August.
Okay.
The cardinal, he's supposed
live
to
live it up.
Right, well, you can. He's supposed to say mass for the royal family.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you gotta
instead,
like that.
And what I love is that what we haven't talked about here is that we have a man of the cloth who's like, you know.
Whose money is he spending?
Well, and he's trying to like get into trousers.
Oh, well, that's not.
But that's just
Elizabeth,
how it happened.
Don't be
then.
Provincial.
That's how it
yeah,
went then.
They're not those kind of Catholics.
No. This is like a very Medici type.
Yes.
Anyway. He gets dragged in front of the king and the queen, and he's, like, told, explain yourself. Mm-hmm. So he's there all duded up, getting ready to say mass, and, like, they sandman him and just, like, yank him off. He's confused.
A diamond hook.
Yeah. But keep in mind, think about his perspective.
Sure.
He's totally confused. Because he said he'd been acting on behalf of the queen.
Yeah, and he's in
love. I mean, he had his doubts.
And he's in love with the story he's telling himself.
Completely. So he's like, no, I was doing it for you, your majesty. Remember the man you hate?
My dear. Wink, wink.
Yeah. Do I need? So he says to a servant, go back to my quarters and get the letter that she handed me in the garden.
And the white flower
I kept and pressed.
And
dried upside down. The one telling me to buy the necklace.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he whispers to the servant, like, and then destroy any other letters from her that you find in my place. He's like, yeah, okay, sure. Yes.
He's like, you don't pay me enough for that.
And the servant's like, yeah, I totally will. I'm putting those in my pocket. Are you kidding me? My family's going to go on antiques roadshow one day. So the servant comes back with the letter.
Mm-hmm.
The king reads it, loses his biscuits.
Oh.
Yeah, he's just, because the letter is signed, the letter from the garden is signed Marie Antoinette de France.
Yeah. But it's like, also, is it too like my sweet or my mon cher or something?
I think
like,
so. But also, it's like my dearest, my sweet, mm-hmm. mon petit chou, love Marie Antoinette, the French one.
Yeah.
So just like the contract, it has that signature. But the king points out that like anyone in the court would know that the royals only sign with their first name. Yeah. So like you're not even a good.
Even I know that.
You're not even a good nobleman.
It just says Louis.
Exactly. That's how I sign things.
Yeah, Louis.
Louis. Exactly.
And I sign him Rick.
Louis and Rick.
Yeah.
So the letter, obviously fake. The king's livid that Cardinal couldn't even see that.
Mm-hmm.
So then they, you know, this gets him sent away. They send him away. Somewhere with which royals would one day become familiar is where they send him to the Bastille.
Hey.
And they order an investigation.
Uh-huh.
And then the law and order, dung, dung. So right before his arrest, Marie Antoinette told the cardinal, quote, it is extraordinary, monsieur, that you could have imagined for an instant that I would have charged an unknown person with a matter of this importance. Moreover, my opinion about you has been established for a long enough time. You should have known that I would never have given you an order like this.
Yes.
The insult of an unknown person.
Uh-huh.
Like, and that's cold.
And I've known you long enough to know you're an idiot.
You're an idiot.
You've never done
yeah.
this.
Yeah, and he's just
an unsexy idiot.
He's just, like, thinking about the would garden.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So the investigators, they quickly figured out that Jean was behind all of this. They arrested her 3 days after the big reveal.
They have these diamonds and they do not. This is why you leave. You got to have an exit plan and
you've
a whole like,
the
who
money.
Am I going to sell it to? Not one at a time at yeah. the market. Not another with the fishmongers. You're like, hey.
Go to New Canada.
Yeah, exactly. You could run New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Even St. Louis. I mean, any one of them. Go up yeah. and down to Missouri, find one. Find go up to the Mississippi, find a town. Doesn't yeah. matter.
No, they just hung out.
Plenty of French settlements.
Well, and by this time, though, she'd heard what was going on, and she destroyed all the evidence of her correspondence and such. So there's nothing on her end. Rateau.
That's what she did.
The
she
gigolo
got rid of the letters.
Yeah, she got rid of the letters. The gigolo gets picked up next.
Yeah.
Nicole, the Marie Antoinette impersonator, she was smart. She moved to Brussels.
Totally.
But they caught her.
I mean, the Ottoman Turks hanging out with them.
They found her.
Of course.
And then there was another person arrested who I haven't talked about yet.
Who?
A fellow by the name of Count Cagliostro.
Oh, wait a minute. I know that name.
Yeah. His real name was Giuseppe Balsamo.
Yeah.
And so the Count, he was, throughout history, he's got all sorts of like, shady stuff. He could probably have an episode.
Definitely.
He was pals with the cardinal.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's this like occultist.
Yeah.
He was a mystic that in French noble. He was like the Joan Quigley to their Nancy Reagans.
That's a good call.
So Cagliostro had used his powers to confirm for Rohan that his relationship with the queen and all the accompanying letters were on the up and up. He's like, the stars tell me.
And you're telling me this royalty, they got overthrown. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
They're such responsible stewards of the country.
Cagliostro, right? Which I know I'm not saying that right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Whatever. I mean, give me a break. Here's the thing, too, that I want to point
out. You're losing your voice. You're fighting through it.
I am losing my voice again. But I'll tell you, too, is that, and I don't know if this happens to you, but it happens to me a lot when we're recording. I can say a word or a name perfectly and normally, but I get in front of this microphone and I don't know how to speak.
Yes. I often mistake syllables and I cannot do math.
But I mess things up that I normally wouldn't mess up.
No, I know you have a much better sense of pronunciation than you
exhibit anyway,
here.
This dude, the Count.
Yes. Count C.
Count C. So the cardinal was like, wait a second. The Count said that this was all the letters were on the up and up. So he must be in on the whole thing. So it was the cardinal who ratted out the Count to the investigators.
It. Yeah. Oh.
Nicholas, the husband, he was also wanted, but he escaped to England and was rumored to be seen like all over
Europe. Of course. Bragging to them about how he conned the French.
Yeah.
And they love that in England. You did what to Marie Antoinette?
Yeah, they're like, fantastic. So he gets away.
Of course. He's got a good story to tell. That's going to get you a lot of dinners.
Like, the royal advisors were like, you know what? Let's just sweep this under the
rug. Yeah, this didn't happen. Stop talking about it.
And instead, the queen's like, no, I want a trial. And I want it as a public trial, which was something they never did.
Austria's going to be laughing at this.
Right. So the cardinal, he's accused of stealing the necklace as well as lèse majesté, literally injured majesty, meaning the act or crime of showing a lack of respect for the king, queen, or other ruler.
Totally. The Thai government still accuses people of that.
Yes, yes. And so because he falsely claimed to represent the queen in his dealings with the jewelers. So the trial took place in January of 1786, and it was all the rage and a total zoo.
I'm telling you, this Everyone is a precipitating
involved,
event.
Oh, it is. It really is. Everyone involved testified.
Okay.
Jean, she held fast to the story that she'd just been following the queen's orders.
Yeah.
And then Rateau, the gigolo, he's the star witness for the prosecution. He flipped.
Yeah.
He made a deal and he gave a full account had happened. Basically, this was the Jean show and the queen knew nothing. So Nicole, the queen imposter, she gets released for lack of evidence. She's like, dude, I thought that they were going to play a prank.
Yeah.
And that's honestly like,
she's like, I'm basically a model and someone told me to wear this dress.
Yeah. And they're like, she's not bright. Just let her go. The newspaper will describe her as she's a beautiful woman, but nothing between the ears.
Walks into walls.
So the gigolo, right?
Yes.
he's a star witness. He gets sentenced to exile as part of his deal. Hmm. So like, we'll treat you well. You just got to leave. I don't know where he went.
Saint Domingue.
Yeah. Nicholas, they find him guilty in absentia, but like, he's
gone. Yeah, he's in the wind. Yeah.
The count was eventually exonerated, but like, he gave really good entertainment at the trial. One of the things he did, he admitted to being guilty of murdering the Roman general Pompey.
Back in the day.
Yeah. He's like, you want to talk history? Here we go. So the cardinal.
Yeah, Caesar took power. Me.
The cardinal's acquitted.
Yeah.
But he had to step down from his position, and he was forced to live in like a really rural monastery until his cardinalate was restored in 1787.
It got restored?
Yeah,
a year later?
Next year. He and his family.
He's given every reason to no longer believe his ability to handle
$10. But he was acquitted.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. So he and his family, they had to pay back the jewelers the entire amount.
Oh.
And then he was initially ordered to publicly apologize for presuming that the queen would meet with him in the gardens at midnight.
That was her stipulation.
Yeah, well, then the court decided against that. He gets acquitted. What's hilarious is that by not having to apologize...
You tell all of them. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I even thought...
But by saying... When the court was like, no, you don't have to do that. Yeah. They're basically saying that, like, we expect the queen to do something tawdry, like meet with someone in the garden at midnight.
Oh.
That was, like, the court's message in there.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
They got a little shot in.
According to How to Ruin a Queen, quote, never before had the expected conduct of a queen been debated so exhaustively by the public. The disputes would echo down through the revolution, a cri de guerre to the rebellious, a taunting cacophony to the faithful.
I'm telling you, dude, the call for her head, I think, is about this necklace.
It really does kick it off. So Jeanne is found guilty.
Huh?
She's punished with a whipping, branded the letter V on both of her shoulders.
Oof.
For voleuse or thief.
Yeah.
The confiscation of all her possessions, and then she also was sent to prison.
Huh.
During her whipping and branding, she fought so hard against it that her chest was branded accidentally. So she had it on the shoulders, and then, yeah,
thrashing,
she's
thrashing and writhing.
Yeah.
And...
So she's officially guilty, but the public had other ideas. They believed that the queen really did want the necklace.
Oh, my God.
And that the cardinal, someone the queen hated, was a scapegoat when her extravagance had been called into question.
Of course, and she needed fall guys.
And then he turned around and he found a scapegoat in Jeanne.
Yeah, so basically everyone with power found somebody who they could hold the bag, and the French people were like, this is what happens.
Exactly.
I'm telling you. You see, Jacques.
Well, and it was fishy to people that while the cardinal was acquitted, he was still exiled.
Uh-huh.
So, like...
Yeah, no one got real punishments. It's kind of interesting.
But also, if you're acquitted, why do you that? Wouldn't you just walk?
Yeah.
Why are they like, totally. And then go out the country for a while, let this cool off. They
and
figured
getting
that,
your stuff back the next
year. Yeah, they're just throwing it all on Jeanne.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a part of the shift in the public opinion about the royals, and we know how that turned out.
And it's so close to the revolution kicking off that you're just like, come on, this is like, he said with a cry de guerre, this is very much going to be on the lips of the people when they're calling for the king and the queen's heads. This is very much in their thoughts of like, we have a perfect example.
Well,
remember that ugly ass necklace they made?
It becomes known as the Affair of the Diamond Necklace.
Oh.
It's like this,
boom.
Like, yeah, this is the kickoff. Jeanne, she gets sent to a woman's prison.
Okay.
And after a month, she tried to escape.
Yeah.
Like any good.
Totally.
Criminal weed profile. According to the paper, quote, she had already made a hole through which her head would go, but she stuck in this opening so that she could neither go forward nor backwards. Fright seized her. She struggled in vain, and her cries summoned the wardens, who found her in that position.
Oh.
So,
did they
just
chisel a block out and let her out?
I guess so. They had to pour butter in there. Thanks to some sympathetic guards, though, another plan was hatched to have her escape. Because they're just like...
Oh, yeah. They're like, the queen railroaded you.
Yeah, and then now she's a folk hero.
Mm-hmm.
According to her own memoirs, she was able to sketch an image of the key and pass that along to someone on the outside who made a copy.
This is not the first time we've heard this. This is so amazing, being able to sketch a key.
It's incredible.
And then someone else is like, oh, I can make that.
Yeah.
And then it works.
Yeah. So she dressed as a man, and then she and a fellow prisoner who was serving as her chambermaid walked out of the prison doors and either straight into a getaway boat, which rowed them upstream to the Seine, or straight into a getaway coach. And either way, it was successful.
I want a getaway boat.
Yeah. So I like a boat getaway. I'm a sucker for that. So she eventually made her way to London, where she reunited with Nicholas.
No, oh, I love pulling for these crazy kids.
Yeah. And but, you know, it put some strain on their marriage, time apart. And in 1789, she published her first book, Memoirs Justificatifs.
Oh, okay.
Like justifications.
Yeah, exactly.
So compared—
Letters of justification, essentially. Yeah.
Compared to other contemporary books and gossip accounts about the royal family, hers was less salacious and more restrained.
Hmm.
But the author of How to Ruin a Queen said, quote, "It performed more insidious work, not just ridiculing the Bourbons, but providing plausible grounds to receptive minds that the queen had committed treason against the nation and her husband."
Yes.
Yeah. So she also started working on her second memoir, which she said was going to be even more revealing.
Well, what other story she got?
In June of 1791, an upholsterer that she owed money to came to visit her to collect and brought a bailiff. And she's afraid of being arrested, obviously. Sure. So she made a break for it. She ran into a nearby house and set up a barricade.
Uh-oh.
And then the bailiff broke through. She jumped out of a window. She's like really badly injured. She broke both of her legs. She's bleeding profusely. She lost an eye.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. And there were like theories that she wasn't trying to escape. She was actually attacked by French royalist sympathizers.
Usually don't lose an eye falling out of a building. I mean, that's like a weird injury.
Yeah. She died from her injuries in August of 1791. Beckman in his book writes, quote, "Though her condition had been improving for a number of days, a surfeit of mulberries brought on a spasm of vomiting, which choked her."
Aren't mulberries known to be poison?
I think.
Like, does anybody actually feed someone mulberries?
I guess. Who knows?
I guess it's mulberry wine.
Who's to say?
There's mulberry wine,
yeah,
right?
And then maybe it's some sort of medicinal thing.
Yeah.
She wrote that autobiography, the second one, The Life of Jane de Saint-Remy de Valois, was published right after she died. Louis XVI, he bought up the entire French run of the book, and he had them burned May 1792.
They're one of those last things he's got to do.
Uh-huh. However, one copy had been hidden and saved, and the French Assembly, sensing some sort of cover-up, ordered an investigation and found the one remaining book.
Why did he have the one remaining
book? Well, someone else grabbed it.
Oh, okay.
And so then that book was reprinted, and the new preface declared, quote, "The lengths to which the court has gone to prevent the publication of this work clearly proves how greatly the monarchy feared its publication, how many facts it contains which the royalist party would have preferred to keep from public knowledge."
Totally. And the fact that it feared the people.
Yeah.
It literally gives you a shot in the arm if you're the people.
Totally. And then again, in How to Ruin a Queen, earlier historians, like even Napoleon himself, saw the necklace as the direct link to the queen's later execution.
Huh.
But the author of How to Ruin a Queen, he said that the affair of the diamond necklace, quote, "was a pivotal moment in this narrative, not simply because it produced sheaves of political pornography. Mm-hmm. It was also a defining pedagogic encounter for the French people, in which they learned to discuss, interpret, and judge the actions of their betters."
Oh, my God.
They would apply these lessons, often with bloody consequences, in the years that followed.
Yeah. So this affair basically taught him to say, "Citizen, I accuse."
J'accuse. Yeah. So here's a fun fact for you. Nicholas, the husband, he eventually went back to Paris, and he was given a job as the director of a theater. And then his name appeared in Les Miserables as one of the weathercocks of the royalist salon frequented by Marius's grandfather.
Hmm.
Little fun fact.
No,
there. So, Zarin, what's your ridiculous takeaway?
Oh, my goodness. If you have history and you're trying to, like, you know, enliven history, and we do this often, you see people make biography movies. We're like, oh, let's show, like, you know, why somebody wanted to kidnap somebody back in the day. And you're like, okay, whatever. This is how you'd make the French Revolution come alive. Just tell this story and then start the French Revolution. And people are like, I totally get it.
Yeah.
You know, and then you don't have to do like all the bloody, really hard and confusing parts of the French Revolution, which is typically like, oh, let's make a movie about the French Revolution. You're like, good luck. But this explains it. You're like, oh, I totally get it.
It's, well, you know, I think about a lot of times when you're telling me about a crime that's like in a larger historical context, I understand the crime better. And then I understand the history better knowing the crime.
Right.
Like those two supplement each other.
Yes, exactly.
And you think about, like, I don't know, I learned about the French Revolution, like, mainly in high school, I'd say.
Yeah.
And that if you had it
it's
constructed
all the reign of terror,
like this,
and all that stuff.
Yeah, but tell me this. Tell me about what actually happened.
The people.
And give me the mood of the people.
Exactly.
Because this couldn't have happened the same way it did at any other time.
Exactly.
And so I think, like, we're, you know, basically we need to rewrite history books to be more interesting.
And it really shows you how lazy the royals had gotten even about being royals. Yeah. They can get engaged and it's like, no, I do want to have a court. I want this man. I want everyone to know. They're so caught up in all the wrong parts of their story. And all they are is living stories.
Everyone lazy about it. They're lazy about their con artists. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just, we'll sell the gems. Because it was just like everyone was just doing what they wanted. And
super indulgent. They'd run out of like real productive, nation building.
Yeah, they're all being freaky deaky.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the makeup and the dots on the faces and stuff. Like, how's my dot?
Big wigs. Yeah. That's all. That's all I have for you today. You can find us online at ridiculouscrime.com. We're also at ridiculouscrime on social media. Email us at ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. Leave a talk back on the iHeart app. Reach out. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by Marquis de Buick, Dave Kustin. Research is by excellent forger Marissa Brown and all-seeing chambermaid Andrea Song Charpentier. The theme song is by Parisian baguette traders Thomas Lee and Travis Dutton. Host wardrobe is provided by Botany 500. Executive producers are Vicomte Ben Bowen and Chevalier Noel Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health 8 kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health 8 Kombucha today.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.